Hey listeners, just jumping in quickly before the podcast to notify you about the Bodytrack Academy educational webinars that we have available via Eventbrite. We cover a variety of topics ranging from oncology, musculoskeletal rehab, neurological rehab, mental health, performance, and much more, all of which you can access 24/7. That means you can purchase the webinar and watch it at any time that suits you. You can claim our webinars as PD points via SS self-assessment tool, and as a valued listener of the podcast, you're entitled to $10 off any of our webinars, but do hurry because the code is only available to the first 10 purchases. Just use the code FIRST10. So head on over to Eventbrite and browse our webinars. The link is in the show notes and on the Bodytrack Academy Facebook page. I'd like to begin this podcast by acknowledging the Yagara and the Turrbal people as the traditional custodians of Meanjin, the lands on which our podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Welcome to the Bodytrack Academy podcast, created by EPs for EPs. The podcast will take you on an in-depth understanding of everything an EP is faced with on a day-to-day basis, including clinical, personal, and business practices, to ensure you become the best practitioner possible. If you enjoy the podcast, make sure you like, share, follow us on whatever streaming service you use to ensure the message spreads and you are notified of any new podcasts or educational resources available to you. Furthermore, if you're not already part of our online academy, head over to Facebook and join the Bodytrack Academy. Happy listening.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Bodytrack podcast. Today, myself, Campbell Wright, I'm a senior exercise physiologist here at Bodytrack. I'll be talking with Dan Ryan about postural orthostatic tachycardia, also known as POTS. So I'll hand it over to you, Dan. Can you give us a bit of an outline or a history of your experience with POTS?
Hi, Cam. Yes. Hi, guys. I've been working with POTS patients or clients for about 7 to 8 years now, and I've been, I suppose, had a good relationship with a few specialists, so I've been getting more and more referrals over the recent years, and the POTS patients and clients that I see will range in many types of symptoms, so we've had long journeys but a lot of success stories as well.
Yeah, and if you dealt with POTS before, and we know it is quite a complex condition, and every presentation might be very different. Can you kind of outline some symptoms that you often see with your POTS clients who come through the door?
Yeah, well, maybe first of all, it's good to define what POTS is and how it's diagnosed. And in a general terms, it's defined by a heart rate increase of above 30 beats per minute. Within 10 minutes of upright posture, or above 40 beats per minute if the person is aged between 12 and 19. The symptoms that I generally see are, again, like I said, from a minimal type of symptoms all the way up to someone who is bedridden with fatigue. Many people describe their symptoms is that they feel like they are beyond exhausted and as if their energy is completely drained. And some of them have said it's 100 times worse than the any type of flu that they've had. And other symptoms include they have troubles concentrating or thinking, and I get reported a lot of brain fog. But then there's a lot of other symptoms that can also affect the mental health. So a lot of frustration, anxiety around having POTS, particularly because the general public aren't too informed about POTS. But also just being able to live life really and be able to be a part of their family and society, which sometimes POTS can take that away from them for a period of time.
Yeah, and POTS kind of comes under that invisible illness bracket, which can often blur the lines between diagnoses. So someone might have all the symptoms of chronic fatigue, but also may have the traditional POTS symptoms, but they might have, you know, the EDS hypermobility side of things, and then are struggling to know which symptom of theirs is related to which condition. So that it's really important to have a chat to them and kind of understand what their experiences are, because some people might have exactly what you said, that really fatigue sign where they come in and they're just like, they have the chronic fatigue symptoms, but then when they stand up, they also have that big change of heart rate. So do you treat the chronic fatigue, or do you refer on to specialists for POTS? It's sometimes, because it's under that umbrella, it's sometimes it's really hard to determine.
You're very much right. And by the time that some clients and patients have come in to see an exercise physiologist like myself, they've usually been through many different areas to find out why they have those symptoms. And from a general practitioner, cardiologist, a lot of the time will help them through the journey. But I've found recently a general physician who's able to manage a lot of different conditions at once has really helped, I suppose, diagnose POTS. And particularly as a lot of people are misdiagnosed as chronic fatigue and or cardiac conditions which may not be 100% related to what they have as POTS.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And it is really interesting about how many new diagnoses of POTS is compared to when I started this 9+ years ago. And for yourself, who's been in the game even longer, you know, the amount of POTS cases that are present is so much more prevalent than ever before. Maybe it's better diagnoses.
Yeah, true.
Talking about the diagnosing POTS, how do you, with your clients who are referred from specialists, do you see any kind of similarities between how they diagnose POTS or strategies that I use that you get referred with?
Yeah, generally, if the physician or practitioner is looking to diagnose POTS with the patient, they'll send them through to a tilt test so they can look at blood pressure and heart rate changes with different ranges of tilt to help them diagnose. And also, a lot of the time, a diary is taken at home so that they can measure their blood pressure and their heart rate at different times throughout the day, and really looking at that consistency of changes in positional blood pressure and heart rate changes, postural changes, sorry. And from that, they're generally diagnosed if they are that 30 beats or more per minute when they're in a vertical position for more for less within 10 minutes. So it's pretty consistent once they get to those findings. But there are a lot of people also on the edge of those findings. So they're potentially referred still to an exercise physiologist to manage the symptoms around a pre-diagnosed POTS position.
Yeah, exactly. The tilt test is an interesting one, where it's not nearly getting used as much anymore as a diagnostic tool because it's such a complex condition. Sometimes it's the diagnostic properties of a tilt test for the information that a cardiologist would get wouldn't be enough to diagnose anything. So they kind of, I've noticed a lot more recently that the tilt test is kind of not a go-to, but still people use it. So it's still good information. But having that diary that you're talking about of symptoms and fatigue and activity and everything, like from hour to hour sometimes, can be really good information. It probably gives us definitely more information about what we can, you know, like the interventions that we can do.
I think definitely, because that gives us, particularly if they've come to their first assessment with that information and that data, it really helps us give a bit of historicals of their symptoms and certain times where they flare up. And I suppose that becomes a bit of that assessment as well. That initial assessment is based off a lot of those historicals and how their current symptoms are managed.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I find as well. Sometimes the whole assessment for someone coming in with POTS, or even if it's they're going through the diagnostic process or they've been diagnosed, is it's mainly just getting a background on tolerance, anxiety, depression, any type of movements, behaviors that they find are provocative, or current strategies that they're using, current medications that they're on. There are different types of POTS. You know, there's three main types of POTS. If we aren't aware, we've got neuropathic POTS, we got hypovolemic POTS, and we've got the hypoadrenergic POTS. We probably won't jump too far into those today, but they are they are commonly looked at differently and the strategies are looked at differently. I was talking to one of our main referrers recently about how does he kind of differentiate and how does the treatment change. And he says, look, it's you can have one person that has blood volume-based POTS symptoms and you put them on specific strategies for that and it doesn't work. And you might put them onto some kind of other medications that work that shouldn't. So he goes, usually we try many things and we like kind of tick things off the list and whatever works for them. So obviously it's a very hard condition. In terms of the things that you see maybe outside of exercise, you know, not the exercise specific management, but do you see anything that common clients come in with that their cardiologist or specialist has told them to do to help manage their symptoms?
Yeah, definitely. Medication is usually a big one, and there's such a variety of medication that POCS patients and clients can be on. And like you said, sometimes it's trial and error. So with the physician themselves, they'll be trialing both volume of a drug within a safe level, but also potentially changing drugs depending on symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Because with a lot of the medications, there are symptoms which could be have a negative effect and probably, outgrow what their actual POTS symptoms are. So
definitely.
That's one big thing is the variety of medications that clients can be on, but also prescribing salt tablets.
Yep.
So to improve that volume, so blood volume.
Yep.
So salt tablets and hydration being a big key for some clients to help manage, particularly if they're exercising over time as well.
Yeah.
And also compression garments. So
yeah,
really helping that venous return. And be able to help stabilize those postural changes a little bit more effectively and for longer. I've found that a lot of clients have managed to be able to do more tasks when they're wearing, say, some compression garments, particularly around the lower limb.
Yep.
And they find it once they've got a habit of using them, it's been a big game changer for their lifestyle.
Yeah, and the compression garments is we sometimes get questions about which ones. And personally, the ones that I kind of prescribe give clients are the 2xU or 2xU. I say 2xU, but I think it's 2xU.
I don't know.
But they have a really good array of graded compression. It pretty much, whatever compression you decide to get, it has to be graded in nature. So it mimics that, you know, hydrostatic pressure from the ankles up to the hips. But the 2xU ones are probably the best out there. There's another couple of places around Brisbane that maybe do the more medical ones.
Yeah.
But the 2xU ones are cheap. They're always on sale. So if you've ever got clients who are asking about this, they're the ones like online. I think the website, The Iconic, they're always half price on there. So, and they work wonders. I do sometimes get a bit of pushback from males who have POTS getting those compression garments on. I have had a male just do the compression garments that come up to the knee, like the socket ones.
Yeah.
I don't know how effective they actually are, but he noticed subjective improvements in his symptoms using them because he didn't want to wear the whole tights. So, I don't know. That's something maybe trial and error with your clients, but those compression garments are really important. And medication-wise, it's just so like the Fludro, the corticoid, steroidal medications, very, very commonly used. If people tolerate those, and beta blockers are something that are used a lot. I see. Do you notice that you get a lot of beta blocker?
And particularly early on to try and help manage the condition, which is probably a good note to take in when they're also exercising and to return to exercise, just to have that note in as well, using a bit of the RPE scale more so than heart rate changes potentially. But usually if they're on those beta blockers, they're probably going to be pretty highly symptomatic, so you're not really pushing too high anyway.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to listen to our podcast. We hope you're learning a lot in this particular episode. Just a shout out to our sponsor, HGG Performance, which provide very high quality, innovative gym equipment and custom fit outs to enable you to pivot your potential and smash performance and rehab goals. They are world renowned for their innovative creations in the gym accessory space, including the best-selling ISO Tib LT, Tib Bar, Wrist Axe, and Nordic Bar. And I got to say, we're using some of these equipment in our clinic and finding some great results. Used by professional sports teams, athletes, and coaches worldwide, as well as the military, health practitioners, and apparently even Joe Rogan uses their gear. HGG is a proudly Aussie-owned company that makes all their gym equipment at their Gold Coast HQ. And our partnership with them, we are stoked to offer you 10% discount on any product with the code BODYTRACK10 so you can experience what all the hype is about yourself. So jump over to their website, go to the checkout, punch in the code of BODYTRACK10 to get 10% off on any of their great innovative gym equipment and start using today. Thanks very much.
Exactly. And it's we can start to integrate some things into the exercise session, knowing what they need outside. If they're on beta blockers, they're probably not going to have a massive tolerance for higher intensity exercise. But if we then also add in some strategies of let's make sure that you have your hydrolyte salt tablet kind of combined within your program, and definitely have it, you know, with half an hour before you exercise, at least, and you're drinking, you know, quite a lot through the day. And then you may come to your exercise session with your compression garments on. Sometimes that they can get such a better experience through exercise, knowing that they have the other things in place that that can help them get through sessions. And because sometimes with POTS clients, I don't know, you might have a very similar experience, but they don't, during a session, they've got some endorphins going, they feel good, and they don't really notice how much it has influenced their symptoms until that afternoon, the day after, the week after. So it's sometimes having those other interventions in and educating them, like, let's start slow, let's build slow. But you're probably going to walk out of here today feeling low. You haven't done much, but that's a good thing. That means you'll come back next time and we know your levels is a really good way to start with them.
Oh, I really agree there. I think what we're and how I explain a lot to clients and patients who have been diagnosed with POTS, a lot of the time they're not very educated in the area as well.
Yep.
So they're find it difficult to talk to their friends and family about what their condition actually has, except they're absolutely fatigued all the time. And then they want to know, why would I want to exercise if I'm fatigued?
Yeah.
So I think an interesting part is it's that capacity that we're really talking about and their ability, their function, you can call it anything, functional capacity, exercise capacity, or their capacity to do something without hitting those really increased fatigue elements.
Yeah.
And for some people, that's moving while they're lying down.
Yep.
It's very low graded. But that's what we're really trying to find out in that assessment is where are we starting? And are we starting in, say, a supine position doing some light movements, or are we able to do a bit more based off the historicals and the assessment?
Yep.
And if we find that position, the starting point, I find then we can actually slowly build up from there with that individual.
Yeah. And that just reminds me of a client that I've just seen where she, at work, she has definitely has the fatigue element of POTS involved, where she's at work and then she has a sedentary job at the front of the computer. But when she has to do a lot of the printing.
Yes.
And so, but standing up to go to the printer multiple times a day absolutely wipes her out. She just feels dizzy. It affects her fatigue, and she notices the more times that she does that, the more fatigue she has, the less will she'll like want to work the next day and things like that. So if we extrapolate that over to exercise, we're probably not going to incorporate a lot of the sit to stand work early on because we know that's provocative for her. And talking about the exercise side of things, Dan, what exercises or what common things do you kind of gravitate towards when you give exercise prescription?
Good point. I really like to do some exercises that's going to help that fitness return.
Mm-hmm.
Because I find a lot of patients, and some things I've read is that baroreceptor fatigue, where you may not get blood pooling, but you get that elevated heart rate with postural changes.
Yep.
So anything I find that helps that venture turn in generally a low way can really help those initial stages. And that can be some calf exercises, because particularly getting those distal points started to get some blood moving and back towards the heart a little bit easier.
Yep.
So, and I can even, sometimes we started just seated, say, heel raises to get that soleus in the calf working, and then slowly build that up. And sometimes it's even a lying position, getting some heel raises in a supine with knees bent.
Yep.
So those are the things that I'm thinking of initially. But really, I suppose the big component is it's based, again, off where their capacity is to start. Yep. And then what we're trying to also do is look at their lifestyle and what do they need to do. A big part which you can mention is, what support do they have? Because some people have family and friends who could really help them, support them to be able to do a lifestyle that they want to be able to do, and I suppose help them, I suppose, get things done around the house. But others don't have that support. And really early on, finding what their needs, essential needs are, or their essential capacity needs to be, is really where we focus and try to get a little bit of greater return.
Yeah, and because it's such a hard to understand condition as well for a family member. If you've got a person who says, "Oh, every time I stand up, I get dizzy," then it's sometimes really hard to understand or put yourself in their shoes. You just go, "Oh, you might have low blood pressure. You know, you have a drink more and things like that." But if you can educate the person to then go and maybe talk to their family about, like, this is what's happening. This is where I need a help with just while I get back onto being able to tolerate more. Overall, I think the main body of research around this, it takes, on average, this is a very average, but about 2 years to be able to become from POTS symptoms with starting to have intervention to then having minimal POTS symptoms affecting your lifestyle. Because POTS is brought on by so many different things, you know, like you, surgeries, trauma, previous illnesses, it's brought on by so many things.
Viral infections, fever, loss of fever.
A lot of the immune stuff, there's a massive things now. So again, when you go through your history, you go, have you had any of the Ross River Lyme disease, glandular fever, all those kind of viral infections can really help maybe put you on a specific referral pathway to maybe an endocrinologist, a specialist in the area or someone like that can really help. What I find really good for exercise, Dan, is I like to start in a specific position. Whether that be lying on their back is probably a good one to start with, and then choosing three exercises that they can do within that position. So maybe lying on the ground, doing some bridge calf raises, and then doing some chest press, or doing some not as much head movement or anything that might exacerbate symptoms, and then do those. And then do exercises maybe in a 30-degree position, so on an inclined bench. So do those three exercises a couple of times, give them a break, stand them up, make sure that they don't have their symptoms are too severe. Then get them onto a 30-degree bench, do three different exercises, and then maybe the last one you do full seated and choose three different exercises. And see how they go with that. You might have to build into that over a couple of weeks. You know, that might be a lot to do for the first week. And then if they can start to tolerate that, I start to add in those 30-degree changes.
Yeah,
I might do an exercise that might go from lying on your back to maybe a 30-degree increase, maybe like a crunch or things like that, or from back lying to then side lying for an exercise.
Yes.
I like to do that to show progression, but also not to have those big postural changes with exercises. So, recumbent bikes and rowers, do you use those a lot with your clients?
Yeah, depending on if they have access to them. Yeah. And that's, I found rowing, particularly for a client, really was helpful.
Yep.
And it's just those, they're not having to change those, I like to say, where their heart is. So it's not moving up or down, side to side, all those things in a quick manner. And as far as they feel I suppose, more control. But again, what we really had to manage was the volume and intensity, because sometimes it was, I think, the first time this person used the rower, they got a bit excited. And because it's, like you said before, they weren't getting the symptoms straight away.
Yeah.
Then it was a day later or two later that they had a great row, but they just absolutely, it was only, I think, 4 minutes of rowing, but that they were pretty fatigued for 2 or 3 days.
Yep.
So it really gave us, again, it's that hit and miss, trying to find out what's best for this person, really managing and lowering the intensity a lot for her.
Yeah, and that's a big thing. I think the recumbent stuff is recommended early on in the exercise management for POTS because, you know, their extremities is around about heart level. So recumbent bike, rower, if you can manage that, again, not a lot of people have that available to them, but if they can come into a clinic, definitely do that. The cardiovascular exercise prescription, even low level walking and things like that.
I really love that. And again, it gets that, helps that fitness return because they're using their calf, that blood pump again, starting to, I suppose, manage that. And I find a really good graded way to return to a functional activity.
And I've also had a couple of clients, and this is something that is definitely subjective, but on the treadmill or walking, going on slight inclines, again, or calf, like, tend to not like, or hiking.
Yeah.
So I've had a client, he's a young male with POTS, but he really struggles to walk around in the heat.
Yeah.
You know? And that's another good point. Heat is going to be probably the biggest influence on symptoms.
Yeah.
You know, like if especially during summer in Brisbane, we can definitely have an increase of symptoms. So we have to be mindful when we exercise. But he went hiking, no symptoms. Walking around the street, symptoms.
Yeah.
And so then he gravitates more towards the hiking. He has to bring a lot of water and everything because it does get a bit humid. But I found that really interesting.
Yeah.
That he tolerated those up incline sides. And that might be that kind of venous return element to it. Again, probably not the first go-to of exercise prescription, going straight over and doing hiking, but he tended to love it. Now that's all he does. He just hikes. So he loves it.
That's great.
But yeah, so we've gone through a lot today, Dan. We've gone through the symptoms. We've gone through how it's treated away from the exercise front.
Yes.
We've gone through how we would treat, in a sense. Again, it's very much into that load management and sometimes prescribing a fatigue diary with your exercise prescription.
I think that's great. Can be
really good. Is there any takeaway points that you would kind of give advice for maybe someone who hasn't done a lot with POTS before or is starting to see more POTS clients?
I think just be individualized as much as possible. Learning about that patient or client is initially the best thing you can have, that best tool. So learning their historicals of what changes their symptoms, and really getting that understanding of where they currently sit. And from there, two things. It's about slowly progressing that client, but it's also being flexible to realize that they might be on a perfect trend line, achieving heaps and managing what seems to be managing their symptoms, and then fall in a heap.
Yeah.
So it's not a straight line, it's a roller coaster. And what I suppose like to say is the trend line slowly creeping forward? Even if the symptoms are up and down a bit, are we slowly progressing? And educating and re-educating the client and I suppose letting them know it's okay to have ups and downs and that you're there with them through the journey and just managing it from a session to week to week. And I think that helps them feel like someone's with them along the journey.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd second that, Dan. I think the learning about the person as a whole and understanding their symptoms and understanding where the importance of education and onboarding the client and understand or helping them or working with them to understand their condition and their symptoms is the best way that we can prescribe exercise. Exercise tends to become pretty the least difficult part after you understand the person as a whole and get the right people on board to make sure they have a team that's working for them, whether that be home or specialists and an EP. But we I think we do really good work with POTS, and I think exercise physiology can have a massive influence on
on someone with POTS. Oh, it's such an emotional ride for the client. And I've just, I suppose, been lucky enough to be 1 to 2, sometimes 3 years down the track, say, this has just changed my life. I thought I'd have these symptoms forever, and they've got to a managed state. And like last or 2 weeks ago, I had a mum with her son who couldn't attend school for the last 2 years, now going back to school because the symptoms are at a stage where POTS is managed. And just the emotion in the mother's, I suppose, appointment when she was here with him was just like, this has just changed our whole life and where we thought we might have to go. So I suppose there's some huge wins that you can have with POTS patients, but again, 2 to 3 years down the track. So you're in the long haul with exercise treatment, I feel.
Yeah.
But definitely worthwhile.
That's it. So it's that start low, build slow. If you keep that in mind, you'll do wonders.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, I think that's all we've got time for today, mate, but I appreciate your time coming in and talking about POTS. It's a very interesting topic, and I hope that we can have many more of these to come.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Cam. It's good to be a part of the podcast. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. So remember to share, like, or follow to keep updated with all our podcasts and educational resources.